Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. This is part three of the series that I'm doing on mold illness and chronic fatigue. And in today's episode, we'll be looking at the concepts of detoxification and drainage. But before you listen to this, you may want to listen to the previous two episodes. So previously, I've just done an overview of mold illness and just painting the picture as a whole in the context of chronic fatigue and chronic health issues and giving you the top line big picture of what you might want to consider if it's something that's potentially impacting you. And then in the previous episode, we looked at in more detail at one of the first things that you would want to do if you suspect that mold illness could be a possible issue for you in your health journey, which is to avoid mold. So looking at mold avoidance in your environment, in your home, in possible places where you spend a lot of time, but also mold avoidance through diet and how to eat if you are suspecting that mold is a potential issue for you. So those two episodes could be good starting points. And then this episode is the next piece in the puzzle, so to speak, when you're looking at addressing mold. Through this idea of practicing mold avoidance, what we're essentially trying to do is to stop more mold toxins coming into the body. And what this episode is about is that how do we get what's already in the body out of the body? And that's where the concepts of detoxification and drainage come in. We're essentially looking to support mold clearance. So I thought that maybe it would be a good place to start would be to explain what detoxification and drainage actually are. So detoxification is the biotransformation of toxins. It's a two-phase process that happens in the liver where toxins are transformed through a series of biochemical reactions so that they can be excreted from the body. And there's many different enzymes and there's many different nutrients which are involved, protein is involved. So there's lots of components to the actual biotransformation of toxins. And then drainage is in how we drain toxins from the body. So it's not that biotransformation, it's literally the clearance or the way that these toxins are able to move through the body. And so what we're looking for when we're looking to support basically toxic load in general, but in the context of this series, mold toxicity specifically, we're looking to upregulate drainage before we upregulate detoxification. Why? Because we want to make sure that once we are detoxifying, we're able to clear those biotransformed molecules, those biotransformed toxins. So that means we want to make sure all the drainage pathways are working well. You may hear people talking about opening up the drainage pathways or opening up drainage. And that's where we want to go next. So that's where I'll start in terms of this episode. And how I want you to think of this is like a funnel. If you've probably most people have seen a funnel before, but if you can just imagine in your mind how a funnel looks, it's wider at the top, narrower at the bottom. So where we want to start if we're looking to improve drainage is if we can widen the funnel, especially the narrower parts of the funnel, then we can improve our drainage. So in a sort of hierarchy, the bottom of the funnel is the colon. That's where we would be excreting the bulk of our toxins through our feces. But we can also excrete toxins through our urine. We can excrete toxins through our sweat and even a little bit through our breath and our breathing practices as well. But the main emphasis in terms of this particular episode is how we begin to open the bottom of that funnel in terms of supporting the colon, which means essentially regular bowel movements daily or twice a day. But there might be some other things we also want to work on when it comes to digestive health. Then one up from the colon is the liver, kidney, and gallbladder. So we want to make sure that those elements of the funnel are supported. And I'll talk about that in a little bit more detail. Then above the liver, kidney, and gallbladder, it's the lymph, the lymphatic system, which we want to make sure that we're supporting as well. And then finally, above the lymph, we've got our cells, our organs, our tissue, like, for example, fat tissue. We can have a lot of toxins which are fat soluble, like mycotoxins, which are stored in fat tissue. And therefore, one of the ways we could support detoxification is through weight loss. But if you now start to lose weight or start to lose body fat, but you don't have well-functioning lymph, you don't have healthy kidney, liver, and gallbladder, and you're constipated, then those toxins have nowhere to go. So then what happens is we can get a buildup of toxins in the system, either weight loss stalls or someone feels even worse when they are losing weight. So that's just a nice little example to highlight the importance of broadening the bottom of the funnel before we start to work on things higher up on the funnel as well. And perhaps what I'll do is on the website with this episode, I'll just include a diagram of that funnel so that you get a little bit of a visual representation. But ultimately, what's happening is that toxins, if they're not circulating through our bloodstream, they're being held in cells, organs, and tissues. And as we perhaps clear them from the body, it's the lymphatic system which drains them into the bloodstream. And then from the bloodstream, these toxins are then carried to the liver. The liver is where these toxins are biotransformed and packaged into bile. And then it's the gallbladder that releases bile into the gut. And then technically those toxins should be bound up in feces, and then they should be carried out of the body. Now, any breakdown in any of these steps can impact our ability to drain toxins and clear toxins from the body. But where I would like to start is by talking about the very bottom of the funnel, which is primarily the gut. And the most important thing we want to be doing here is making sure we have bowel movements. So if you're constipated, this is something that you're going to want to solve for. Very often we can improve constipation through simple changes like having a good diet with enough fiber, with making sure that we're hydrating well and drinking enough water. Sometimes you maybe do need to deal with gastrointestinal imbalances to get elimination working well. But we can also use supplements, for example, like vitamin C at high doses can support bowel movements. Magnesium citrate is a supplement that you could also take to support more regular bowel movements. With clients, I sometimes recommend a product called Bowel Mover, which is a Cellcor product. It literally does what it says on the tin, which is move the bowels, help to support more regular bowel movements. Sometimes taking a fiber supplement like PHGG can also help to support bowel regularity. So if you are working through mold illness as a possible cause of chronic fatigue, you really just want to make sure you are not constipated and you're doing what it takes to have a regular bowel movement, if not two each day. And if that's not happening, it's really something that you need to solve for before you can work through other parts of this journey of clearing mold from the body. Sometimes what we need to do is support the gut as a whole. And the model that we use in clinical practice when we're supporting people with digestive issues is to work north to south. So understanding that the gut is a chain of different organs, different parts of, I guess, a different organ systems that are interconnected, you know, from your mouth to your rectum, and anything that's going wrong higher up the chain can have a negative impact further down the chain. So I actually have a whole course on this, which is the Gut Health Mini Course, which is something that if digestive issues are a big problem for you, you could work through in your own time. I'll link to that in the show notes. It goes beyond the scope of this particular episode to go through all the things we would do for the gut working north to south. You know, if you want more detailed information, the mini course would be a great option for you. But very briefly, I'll just go through the main kind of check-in points that we want to consider. So the first is the nervous system. Because the nervous system has this connection to the gut through the vagus nerve, the gut is often called the second brain. We have the gut-brain axis. What's going on in the nervous system, particularly heightened states of sympathetic activation, can be a cause of constipation, but also constipation can then drive bacterial imbalances in the gut, which can create their own problems as well. So supporting your nervous system would be it's probably an essential component for anybody on this journey, but it could be an underlying cause of ongoing gut issues that just don't seem to resolve through supplementation. So that's something that you'd want to solve for. And of course, I would recommend my Nurturing Resilience subscription if you're looking for more support for your nervous system. Then the next part of that chain is going to be the mouth and chewing. So we want to make time for meals. We want to eat mindfully. We want to make sure we're chewing our food. And then provided all of that is happening and we're making saliva and we're swallowing well and everything is going down into the stomach, the next thing we want to address is stomach acidity. So a lot of clients either have high stomach acid, they maybe have ulcers, hiatus hernia, H. pylori, which we need to get to the bottom of that and how we address the high acid. But on the flip side, I've got a lot of clients who also have low stomach acid. They're underproducing stomach acid, which is meaning that they're not starting that initial phase of digestion off strong. And that can cause problems further down the chain in terms of impacting the balance of bacteria in the gut, but also impacting the gallbladder, because the acidity that we get from our stomach acid, when that acidic bolus of food moves down into the small intestine, that can be a trigger for gallbladder stimulation and then bile production. So we need to solve for any issues with stomach acid. We need to also solve for any issues in the small intestine, whether that's bacterial overgrowth in the small intestine, whether that's poor production of pancreatic enzymes, again, because someone is stressed or their pancreas is just being overloaded with blood sugar control. These are things that we need to solve for. As I've mentioned already, we want to make sure that the gallbladder is working well. So the gallbladder is what ejects toxins through the bile into the gut so that they can be eliminated. Now, it goes above and beyond the scope of this episode to talk about the gallbladder in more detail. But the good news is I have a whole episode dedicated to the gallbladder, which you can listen to. And that episode is episode 79. So you can search for that on my website. You can search for that on your favorite player. If you feel like I really need to pay attention to my gallbladder, then that will be the episode for you. And then finally, there's the colon. So we've spoken already about how we can support elimination of the feces through the colon and avoid constipation. But sometimes if there's disturbances to the microbiome, if there's infections or parasites or other things going on in the gut, not only is that going to be contributing to the toxic load, because these organisms produce their own toxins, which can get absorbed into the bloodstream and then need to be processed by the liver, but this is potentially going to impact the ability of the bowels to move. So sometimes it can just be as simple as taking some vitamin C, taking some magnesium citrate, taking some bowel mover, eating enough fiber, hydrating the body, and then the bowels move. But sometimes we might need to kind of solve for other imbalances which are driving the constipation, and then get the bowels moving. And this is where things can become a little bit more complicated. And the gut health mini course that I have on my website that goes into how we would maybe solve that in more detail. So we do want to make sure that we are getting the bowels moving. That is the number one priority when it comes to supporting detoxification and drainage. Then other options to further support the drainage of these toxins and open that bottom of the funnel is going to be making sure you're hydrating, you're drinking enough water each day. Perhaps if you tolerate it, that you're sweating in some way, whether that's using an infrared sauna. Some of my clients will use the infrared sauna blanket at home, or they've got an infrared sauna cabin, or they go somewhere where they can use an infrared sauna cabin, or they're just using whatever sauna, even if it's not infrared, at their gym to encourage sweating. And ideally, if you can tolerate it, maybe you would be doing this 30 to 40 minutes, you know, twice a week, three times a week, four times a week, whatever you can tolerate, really. Or, you know, sweating in some way, just getting these toxins mobilized. Obviously, for people who are particularly toxic, and this was my experience, when I first started doing sauna, I could only tolerate a very, very small amount, and then I would get post-exertional malaise. Part of that could be because sauna does mimic cardio, has the same impact on the body as cardiovascular exercise. So it can be a stress on the body. But also, if you've got a lot of toxicity and these toxins are being mobilized too quickly, that can make you feel really, really unwell. So even though the ideal amount is maybe 30 to 40 minutes, 3 to 4 times a week, with people who are chronically unwell, we have to think about, well, what can we tolerate? And the mistake I made in my own journey was throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I can't do 30 minutes, so I won't do anything at all. Instead of just getting in for 5 minutes, and just like we would with exercise, building up my tolerance gradually over time. If you can get some sort of sauna exposure, that will be really great. Otherwise, you can do what I call poor man's sauna, which is you can have a hot bath, get the body warm, maybe put some Epsom salts in that bath. And then after the bath, even just rest afterwards, put some towels and some blankets over your body to continue having a sweat response. And then if you have capacity, you can always then shower and wash yourself off after that as well. In addition to that, then we can also just think about other things that could potentially helpful. I used to do oil pulling. So when you hold, I used to put coconut oil in my mouth with a little bit of charcoal mouthwash and swirl that around in my mouth for about 10 minutes after my sauna, just to kind of like pull out anything that was potentially mobilized. And just making sure that you're breathing well, ideally nasal breathing, maybe doing some mouth taping at night. All of these things will potentially be supportive for draining toxins from your body. So once we've addressed the sort of draining things out of the body component, we've looked at gut health, we looked at the gallbladder, then the next two things we can start to think about would be the kidneys and the liver. So the liver is where toxins undergo the process of biotransformation. I've mentioned that already. And this process of biotransformation has two phases, phase one detoxification and phase two detoxification. And remember, we always want to start by ramping up what comes at the end. And what I mean by that is if we were to ramp up phase one detoxification before we've ramped up phase two detoxification, then we're going to have a bottleneck. Because if we're speeding up phase one, but phase two is sluggish, then what we'll notice is that there's a buildup of toxins potentially in the intermediary stage where they can potentially be even more toxic. So what's really important to understand is that phase two detoxification is amino acid conjugation. What that means is the body takes an amino acid, it attaches it to the biotransformed or partially biotransformed toxin at this point in time, and then it's by attaching the amino acid to the toxin that now the waste product is water soluble and it can be excreted. So in order for this to happen, we need protein. And I talk about protein all the time for blood sugar control, which it is really important for, because this is a bit of a side tangent, because if our blood sugar is imbalanced and we're eating too much carbohydrate, that's another stress for the liver to have to deal with. So blood sugar regulation is really important for detoxification. But additionally, we need protein for blood sugar regulation and just amino acids for that phase two detoxification. Specifically things like N-acetylcysteine, glycine, taurine, glutamine, cysteine, and methionine, all some of the major ones for the phase two detoxification. If you're getting a good amount of protein in your diet and you're able to digest and absorb that, that may be sufficient. But in some cases, you may even want to supplement with these specific amino acids to support detoxification. So we want to make sure we're getting enough protein. Then we can think about how we want to support the phase one detoxification. And that's quite B vitamin dependent. So we want to be thinking about B vitamins, but we can also think about things like glutathione, flavonoids, phospholipids, can all be beneficial for the phase one detoxification. Kind of more generally, when we're thinking about detoxification and just supporting the liver, we want to also just think about the overall toxic load in the body. Even though we're trying to get rid of mycotoxins, we're going to do that more effectively when there's just less toxins to process as a whole. So that might be eating an organic diet, making sure we just have a good variety of colorful fruits and vegetables, herbs and spices, making sure we've got good fats in the diet, making sure we're doing good blood sugar regulation, and we're also not eating too frequently. I mean, in some cases, if someone is prone to low blood sugar, they might need to eat frequently, but we're not eating more frequently than what is needed. And then once we've got those basic nutritional foundations in place, there are specific foods which can also support the liver. And those are things like ginger, milk thistle, which could be taken as a supplement, coriander, watercress, mint, horseradish, sorrel, regular radish, peppermint, parsley, dandelion, garlic, turmeric, citrus if it's tolerated, eating animal liver, which will be a great source of B vitamins, a great source of iron, eating eggs, cruciferous vegetables, beetroot, berries, and green tea. So what I'm often asking clients to do is kind of just eating a good whole foods, unprocessed diet, balancing their blood sugar. And then I'll give them this liver list of liver supportive foods. I'll be like, right, you know, could you eat more watercress? Could you eat more garlic? Could you eat more cruciferous veg? Could you eat more beetroot? Could you drink more green tea? And just pick the things that they can possibly incorporate easily enough into their diet day to day to give that liver support. And then in terms of supplements, things that I might recommend from a supplement perspective might be something like Cellcore has got a product called KL Support for kidney and liver. So there we can be supporting the kidney and liver with some of those supportive nutrients. And maybe even then we add in some support for the gallbladder as well, if necessary. So we're making sure that we're eliminating toxins from the body by supporting the colon, by addressing gut health. We're looking at how we support the liver. And then the next step is to support the lymphatic system, because toxins are draining through the lymph to the liver where they get biotransformed. So the lymphatic system is part of the immune system, and it's complementary to our circulatory system. And it's made up of lymphatic vessels, lymph nodes, lymphatic and lymphoid organs, and lymphatic tissues. And the role of the lymphatic system is to remove excess fluid from body tissues. And when this is working well, it prevents the buildup of fluid and water retention in the body. So water retention, classic sign of sluggish lymph. A removal of fluids is how the lymphatic system acts as an organ of detoxification and waste removal. Those toxins are in the fluids which the lymph is moving through. It can also absorb fatty acids and transport fat to the circulatory system. So as I used that weight loss example before, like how when we lose weight, those toxins have to go somewhere, and they go from the cells, the fat cells, into the lymph, and then they need to be drained from the body via the lymphatic system. And the lymphatic system can also produce our immune cells. So if our lymph is overloaded, that's potentially going to have an impact on our immune system and our immunity. The lymph fluid drains into lymph capillaries, which are tiny little vessels. And the fluid is then pushed along when a person breathes or when their muscles contract. So this highlights the importance of movement and good, healthy diaphragmatic breathing practices. The lymph capillaries are very thin, and they may have lots of tiny little openings that allow gases, water, and nutrients to pass through into surrounding cells. So it helps to nourish the cells, but also clear waste products from the cells. So movement and breathing are going to be the two primary ways that we can encourage removal of cellular waste from the lymphatic system. So now we're getting into the cellular drainage. Cellular waste is draining into the lymphatic system, and then we need to move that lymph so that the waste products are carried to the liver. Very often people who are unwell, who have a lot of fatigue, they don't move a lot. Or they move once a day, they do their, you know, structured walk, and then they're like horizontal the rest of the day. Where it can actually be better if you're working on detoxification to be moving little and often. Or if energy allows, then you can stimulate the lymphatic system with things like dry brushing, lymphatic drainage massage. If you have capacity, jumping on a rebounder. If you have more capacity, running, walking, swimming, or whole body movements. You can use gua sha or manual lymphatic drainage techniques. Or if you want some more information on how you can support your lymph, there's a really great Instagram account called Stop Chasing Pain by, I think it's Dr. Perry Nichols, I think his name is. I really should have checked that before I started recording. But he has some really great trainings that are paid trainings, but worth doing if you really want to get into the nuts and bolts of supporting your lymphatic system. So we're still working from the bottom of the funnel up. We've talked about the digestion, the colon, the importance of elimination, sweating, urinating, and breathing. We've talked about supporting the liver, the kidneys, and the gallbladder. We've talked about supporting the lymph. And then we get to detoxification at a cellular level. So remember that the cellular waste is draining into the lymph. And here it might be helpful to talk a little bit about autophagy. So autophagy is made up of two words, auto, which means self, and phagy, which means eating. So self-eating. It is the process by which cells will cannibalize some of their own parts in a continual cleanup process that keeps us functioning in a healthy way. You can think of this as taking out the cellular trash. And as a result of the cellular trash being cleared out, cell function improves. And healthy cells mean a healthier body. So research has suggested that defects in autophagy regulation are associated with poor cellular health and disease, including neurodegenerative diseases, cancer, pathogen infections, and metabolic diseases. But we can upregulate our natural cellular process of autophagy by doing certain things, which I'll talk about in a moment, like fasting. And in doing so, we can improve metabolic health, we can improve neurodegeneration, we can improve our energy production, and we can reduce inflammation, but we can also support the toxic burden in our cells. So how do we upregulate autophagy? Well, autophagy is induced when cells sense stress signals such as heat stress, like using sauna, cold stress, fasted exercise, resistance training. There are certain autophagy boosting foods, but generally the most accessible to people who aren't very well is fasting, calorie restriction, and a ketogenic diet, because these can create nutritional stress that can induce autophagy. And all of this is probably best applied under supervision. There's a lot more resources on my website about fasting and the ketogenic diet. I also cover these in the blood sugar mini course. So one of the things we want to do before we implement fasting or a ketogenic diet is first achieve blood sugar stability. So the blood sugar mini course guides you through, first of all, achieving the stability and then transitioning into the ketogenic diet and fasting if needed. So autophagy, fasting, hormetic stresses, which I've talked about on previous episodes in terms of heat stress and cold stress, could all be a really important part of this detox and drainage piece of the puzzle. The final thing I wanted to touch on here is just talking about cellular health and cell membranes. So healthy cells have healthy membranes, which control the flow of nutrients and waste. So if we have unhealthy cell membranes, we can sometimes, this may impact the active removal of waste products out of the cell. And that can then have an impact on inflammation, hormones, communication between cells, so many different roles in the body. So cell membranes are made up of things like cholesterol, phospholipids, as well as membrane proteins. And this means that we need food in our diet, which supply cholesterol, phospholipids, and proteins for healthy cell membranes. And so this is where a ketogenic diet can potentially be beneficial, because we're getting cholesterol from eggs and animal-based fats such as shellfish, meat, or dairy. But choline, which is really important, we can get from chicken breast, salmon, bone marrow, liver, pork, eggs, beef, shrimp, broccoli, and green peas. And there are three main types of phospholipids in the body. And one of the most important is going to be phosphatidylcholine. And this is something that we often recommend as a supplement for those people who are working on their cellular health and that cellular detox or cellular toxic burden. So phosphatidylcholine is one of the most abundant phospholipids. It's also a precursor to acetylcholine, which is an important neurotransmitter for memory and cognitive function. We also have phosphatidylserine, which is important just for general cellular health, especially a healthy brain chemistry. It can be found in meat and fish. And then we've got phosphatidylethylamine, which can also play a significant role in the formation of the cellular membrane. And it's really important for our neural tissue. So we want to be consuming foods which are going to be supportive for our cell membranes. And we want to make sure we're avoiding foods that are going to potentially be destructive for our cell membranes. And that would be things like refined sugar, vegetable oils, fried, burnt, or blackened foods. So this is where the foundation comes back to diet. Just a whole foods, blood sugar balancing diet with good sources of fatty acids and good sources of these cell membrane supportive foods. And then what we may often do is add things like phosphatidylcholine as a supplement on top. We also want to make sure we've got good amounts of omega-3 in the diet. This is going to be really important for the fluidity of the cell membranes. In some cases, I might ask a client to do an omega-3, omega-6 fatty acid test so we can see if there's some personalization required in terms of supplementation. And then we also just want to make sure for healthy cell membranes that we've got good amounts of antioxidants in the body. So glutathione is one that we can often supplement with, but also things like vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin E, CoQ10, beta carotene, lycopene, and many others may also be supportive. So that is kind of everything I think you need to know at this stage. I appreciate it's a lot of information when we're looking at detoxification and drainage. But if I was just to summarize one more time, the main thing to emphasize is we're working from the bottom up in supporting that drainage funnel, which means we support the clearance of and the elimination of toxins from the body first. Then we can maybe ramp up the liver, kidney, gallbladder support, although the gallbladder support sometimes links with the clearance piece in terms of digestive health. Then we can work on the lymph, and then we can work on the cellular health and look at these cellular supportive foods, as well as maybe some fasting or a ketogenic diet and supporting autophagy. So that's the order. And it's really important that we follow this process before we move on to the remaining phases of the process, which would be adding in binders and then looking at antimicrobials, because we want this whole funnel of detoxification and drainage to be working really well. Because once we start to add in binders or we start to add in antimicrobials, we're potentially ramping up more toxins getting pulled out of tissues, more toxins being created by die-off. Therefore, we want to have some really good habits in place to support detoxification and drainage. So I will be talking more about binders, more about antimicrobials and biofilm in the next episode, but I hope you have enjoyed this one, and I'll speak to you soon.